The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast. Here on CBS Sports, that's Tom Fornelli, that's Bud Elliott, I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/cover3 and all across the 24/7 Sports Facebook network. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe and smash that like and come and join us in the chat. A lot of movement, a lot of news to get to since the last time we joined you. So we got to talk about all the coordinator shakeups. And, you know, we're not going to put our final grades on this, but we are looking ahead because once this last round of assistant carousel stops spinning, we are going to be back with some assistant coaching carousel grades and recaps for all of you. Plus, a little bit of news, sort of coming out about Texas and Oklahoma's SEC future. Why are we having so much trouble reaching a deal? When do we think Texas and Oklahoma will join the SEC? And by the time they do, what does the SEC look like? Where are Texas and Oklahoma in their respective programs? Where is the SEC at that time? All that and more coming up. But we begin with the defensive side of the ball at Alabama. Pete Golding, of course, is going to be off to Ole Miss. And after we had some conversations about where's Nick Saban going to go on the defensive side of the ball? Well, he's probably going to go with someone familiar. He's probably going to go with someone who knows him. Hard to get more familiar than Kevin Steele returning for his third stint with Nick Saban's Alabama Crimson Tide. Kevin Steele spent this past season with the Miami Hurricanes. Much more on the Canes later, because now we've got some significant openings for Mario Cristobal as well. What do we make of Kevin Steele as the hire to replace Pete Golding at Alabama?
I think it's probably a good move. He's familiar with Kevin Steele. I think if you look at Kevin Steele's stops, you kind of know what you're going to get, right? Obviously, tried to become the head coach at Auburn, was not successful in doing so, but did run a really good job, a really good defense when he was at Auburn. I thought he did a fine job at his prior stops as well. Likely had the best performance, I think, of anybody that played that Joe Burrow offense in 2019. Oh, yeah. And generally, I think, knows how to coach defensive football. And most importantly here, knows how to coach under Nick Saban. I don't think he's going to be leading a coup to take over Nick Saban, most likely. So probably no real fears there. And I would rather work for Nick Saban than Mario Cristobal, even though both are you know, guys that certainly demand a lot of their coordinators. But I think it's fairly well accepted out there that he probably wanted to hire Jeremy Pruitt, mm-hmm. but either didn't or couldn't, some combination thereof. And I think Kevin Steele is a better hire than the assumed alternative to Pruitt, the backup plan to Pruitt, who was Todd Grantham, who was already on staff and has now found a job with the Saints. So I think I'd rather have Steele than Grantham if I couldn't have Pruitt.
Yeah, I think that as far as defensive coordinators go, Steele's a perfectly fine hire. He's been doing it for like 40 years. He's been at Alabama now. This is his third stint. Don't really have any questions. I'd rather just do crazy conspiracy stuff here. Is Steele still working for Auburn and this is part of the coup, or was Nick Saban behind the coup the entire time trying to install Kevin Steele as the head coach at Auburn? Never know. Also, was Steele not Saban's first defensive coordinator hire at Alabama?
He was.
07? Yes, pretty sure.
But is then he got moved last? Off of it to linebackers coach?
But I'm saying like Tom Brady announces his retirement last week. Now there's the whole movement. Oh, come back and sign with New England for a day and retire. Is Kevin Steele Nick Saban's last defensive coordinator at Alabama? And is there a chance, like, I mean, maybe, you know, Jeremy Pruitt was probably, from what you're hearing, maybe may have been the preferred target. But is there a chance this job wasn't as desirable as maybe you would think because coaches aren't sure how much longer they're going to be there with Nick Saban sticking around?
Well, it's an interesting question. I guess it depends on what situation you were leaving, right? Pruitt's not leaving a situation that is better than this. I would rather coach Alabama's defense than Miami's. Right. Like Miami's recruiting well, but I'd still rather have Bama's talent. Not a huge fan of Todd Grantham's track record. So I guess it just depends on like who else you might hire.
But that's my point. Look at the three names that have been closely connected to this gig. Like you think you look at what he has done at Alabama, like on, as far as the offensive coordinator side, I mean, I know some Alabama fans will get to it shortly, aren't completely sold on Tommy Rees, but typically when you look at the coordinator hires he's made, they've tend to be pretty solid hires. Then when you're hearing the names that are floating for Alabama's defensive coordinator position, and again, I think Kevin Steele's a good defensive coordinator. I think Jeremy Pruitt would have been a good defensive coordinator. Todd Grantham was going to blitz. But other than that, it was like, where were the hot young names that you would expect to be like, ooh, I get a chance to go be the defensive coordinator for Alabama and take over that kind of talent and maybe further my career and get myself a head coaching job out of this somewhere? Why weren't those names interested in the gig? Or was Saban just not interested in hiring those guys?
That's a really good question. So if we had done this show last year and said, hey, it's the end of 2021, predict what Bama's going to have to do at the end of 22 since Golding's going to move on, I think I would have told you Doug Belk, who did a really good job with Houston, had worked under Nick Saban, had been in that system. But Houston this year took a major step back defensively. Now, part of that, they lost six starters in the span of a week to injury. And that really, it seemed to correlate as they gave up like 70-something points to SMU. But that's a hard sell, right? A guy who has not been a D coordinator for that long, and they were one of the worst defenses in the American this year. But maybe, you know, that like that's one. Obviously,
Jim Leonard would be the one where it's like if
that's, but it's not Saban's tree, right? Yeah. Like Saban's going to want to run Nick's defense. I think he's more open to doing different things offensively, right? Like he's never really brought in somebody defensively that doesn't run what he runs for the most part. Like even with Golding, they kind of try to marry the two styles. I'm a little surprised they were not able, and I don't know if they went after him, but I would probably say, like, do you like Muschamp as a DC? Do you like Scherer as a DC? The Georgia's guys, right? But they got a pretty good thing going in Georgia right now. So
I do think that being the defensive coordinator for Kirby Smart right now is a better job than being the defensive coordinator for Nick Saban at Alabama, because your talent is comparable and your runway is longer. And to answer your first question, Tom, if we were by placing bets, I do think Kevin Steele is the last defensive coordinator hire that Nick Saban will make. I think the familiarity allows, you know, Saban to not stress. Like if they're underperforming, then you know he might make a change. But he at least knows that he doesn't have to explain something twice. All right, you know, like he doesn't have to come back and keep tabs on Kevin Steele to make sure that he's following everything. So it's almost like a move that allows Saban to free himself up to focus on the things that he thinks isn't working, which probably includes the offensive side of the ball. One more question here before we get there. So Kevin Steele, based on his long track record throughout the SEC, throughout the South, I always associate him as being a good recruiter, but then I went to his 24/7 profile and understand that sometimes a little bit difficult. You know, who's going to get the primary? Who gets credit for a recruit? So I guess, like, Bud, what is the recruit? Is Kevin Steele one of those guys that you can put a check mark by him, like, knows how to recruit the big dogs in the SEC? This is not going to be a place where we see any drop off, because Nick Saban could have three more years. I mean, there's still the importance of stacking class after class, as the Crimson Tide did just lock down the number one class in the country last Wednesday.
All right, so Kevin Steele for a long time was known as a really strong recruiter. Like, even back to the days when he was an assistant for Bobby Bowden. I don't think he was quite as good of a recruiter at the end of his time at Auburn. And this year, I was just listening to the Through the Smoke podcast from Inside the U, our 24/7 Sports Miami site, and they said they really could only credit him as the primary recruiter for one player in Miami's class. So I think it's an open question as to whether he still has the same recruiting chops that he once did. I mean, how old is Kevin now? He's got to be a good bit older. Yeah, I mean, he's not 45 anymore.
He's 64. That
doesn't mean you can't do it, but he's getting up there in age, and most of our top recruiters out there are not in the mid-60s.
I think Kevin Steele is a perfectly fine, acceptable hire. I do believe he's the last defensive coordinator that Nick Saban will hire, and making this move allows Nick Saban to focus all of his energies in places other than checking after his defensive coordinator. I did think about the fly sweep. I know that's disrespectful. I'm sorry. I was thinking about Kevin Steele, and, you know, one of our editors reached out. He was like, you know, let's really build this out. Let's think about the whole Rolodex. I mean, this guy was a head coach at Baylor. Didn't go well, but, you know, he's been an interim coach twice. You know, Auburn obviously was a little bit of a different scenario where you're actually a coach versus just sort of babysitting the program as he did for Tennessee in between Jeremy Pruitt and Josh Heupel. But he was defensive coordinator as Tavon Austin ran the fly sweep into the end zone for 5 first half touchdowns and a 70-33 loss to West Virginia for the Clemson Tigers back in the Orange Bowl. So, you
know, this was an internet moment too. Like, I guess the offseason, can we do this for a minute? So if you're a young listener out there or young viewer and you don't remember this, it was Holgo at West Virginia. They had some real studs on offense, and Clemson had
They had just won the ACC for the first time in 20 years. Yep. You know, Taj Boyd, like, they picked up a couple losses that season, so they weren't really in the mix for the BCS title, but it was an ascending moment for Dabo's program for sure.
And there was a coach named Bob Stitt at Colorado School of the Mines, right? Yep. Which is D2 or D3 or NAIA? I think it's
D3, but I'm not 100% sure.
Like, non-scholarship Colorado School at the Mines. And this set off like a kind of like an internet, you know, Twitter moment. We were all watching it. And in the post game, Dana Holgerson, who's now the head coach at Houston, who was a really good OC on the air raid tree, he shouted out and he was like, yeah, I took that fly sweep play from Bob Stitt, and like, home field made shirts about it. And it was pretty cool. And people were like, who's this Bob Stitt guy? And everybody was like, trying to figure it out. But for that night, Kevin Steele did not figure it out.
Homefield still has some pretty sweet Colorado School of Mines gear. You know what? I hate the legacy of that play. That I hate is that counts as a completion for a quarterback now.
But that's why it works, because if he drops it, it's not a fumble. It's an incomplete pass.
I know, but I think that, you know, statistically, I would like for that to count as a rush. Like, if the pass only travels less than a yard forward, that should be a rush. It should be considered a handoff. That's just me, if I was making the rules.
I was hating on CJ Stroud last year. I think he had picked up maybe 5 touchdowns from these fly sweeps. I was trying to pull him off his touchdown count. Talk about things that make fan bases mad at us. Yeah, the score at halftime of that game was 49-20. 35 points for West Virginia scored in the second quarter alone. And as I was sitting there in that press box, Train was going to be the halftime show.
Drop Jupiter in your hand. As
Train came out to perform a 20-minute set, I was grumpy, not really just because of the Train thing, but because we were doing a 20-minute Train set and it was 11 p.m. Eastern time, because we had already reached the amount of time that the whole game should have taken just to get through that first half, 49-20. Yeah, that led, by the way, to Kevin Steele being fired at Clemson, and Dabo Sweeney goes to hire Brent Venables. Boom. Rest is history. Two national championships, lots of defensive linemen into the NFL draft.
You grew up in the Chicago area. You get used to being delayed by 20-minute train sets.
Oh, man. Contact your local Alderman. That's not the worst halftime show we've had in Orange Bowl history, though.
What is it?
Ashley Simpson. Remember this?
Oh, God.
God, it was like 03 or 04, maybe 05. I don't remember.
Was that a bowl game or Thanksgiving? I can't remember.
That was the Orange Bowl, dude. I'm like, I'm pretty sure. I'm going to put it in a private check.
We lose Bud?
Yeah.
It's in the...
there we go. Your audio's going out.
Okay. Is it better now?
There we go.
We're good.
All right. I just put in the link to it in the private chat. Maybe include this in the show notes, but
Ashley Simpson at the Orange Bowl
is pretty epic. She was actually like booed hard during the Orange Bowl. It was amazing.
Sad. All right.
Second best Simpson by far in that family.
To the offensive side of the ball for Alabama. One last thing. So in the chat, there was some comments before we got started, and I do love that you guys come and hang out. It is part of the community, and this offseason is a great time for us to really, you know, breathe a little bit and enjoy continuing the conversation. Is Kevin Steele a placeholder for Jeremy Pruitt? Is he just sitting on the spot until Pruitt can get his name cleared, and then you can get the hire? You want to talk crazy conspiracy theories, Tom? That's a really good conspiracy theory.
So you're saying like it's a Hugh Freeze situation where it's like, oh, no, we just got to wait it out. And then they'll finally let us hire him.
Maybe.
So Pruitt's NCAA case has not been adjudicated yet, right? If the things that are alleged are proven true, the odds that you get a show cause out of that, based on my opinion of what happens with prior case history, are quite high. So, given where they are in the timeline, the chance that is settled before this season starts, I would say, is very low.
Oh, yeah. So,
I do not think there's a placeholder. And I do not think Alabama can hire him with the case hanging over his head like it is.
I'm going to say Kevin Steele is the defensive coordinator for Alabama for the 2023 season. Yeah. I don't think there's anything that is going to change that. All right, what about the offensive side of the ball? Tommy Rees is going to be leaving Marcus Freeman's staff at Notre Dame, and he will be taking over the Alabama offense. Before we look to the Notre Dame side of this, what is a Tommy Rees offense?
It's not what you saw in 2022.
Well, we have quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Multiple quarterbacks that potentially are going to change exactly what the offense is going to look like.
I mean, it's modern pro stylish, really, I think is the best way to a lot of RPO kind of stuff. When he's able to do what he wants to do, there's a lot of RPO stuff in there, and it's still kind of built on the run game, but just, you know, it's not that different from what Alabama has been doing the last few years. Honestly, it's just last year in South Bend, because of the quarterback situation and the receiver situation, which we've gone over a billion times, they weren't really able to do any of it. Like, Tommy Rees was calling plays with one arm tied behind his back, and it just was very easy for other teams to defend. And I think at Alabama, he's probably going to have better pieces around him this year, and we'll see. I mean, I don't think it's a bad hire. Like, when Rees first got the hire at Notre Dame, I was on here all the time saying, the one thing that stands out about me to Rees, because I don't know jack shit about calling a game during a game, but the one thing I do know is if an offensive coordinator makes a play call where I'm just like, what the hell are you doing? Like, if I understand it, then it makes sense. That to me is a red flag. When I would watch Notre Dame games, Tommy Rees rarely made those kind of play calls where it's like, why are you running this to the short side? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Why are you doing, you know, in these kind of situations? It all made sense. It might not have always worked, but it always made sense. So as far as that aspect goes, I think it's a good hire. I think he's going to have a talented team, and I think, you know, it's probably going to work out pretty well. It's worked out for every offensive coordinator at Alabama for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, like, your odds of having success at Alabama as the OC are really, really high. I think there's just degrees of the success, right? Like, I don't think we were in love with how Bill O'Brien called it. Part of that was probably some of their personnel stuff. I think if we're going to talk about that with the lack of receivers Bama had this year, we should probably also discuss, like, look, Notre Dame's receivers didn't exactly scare anybody. Now, should they have gone more RPO heavy? Maybe, possibly. But like that, a way to, you know, to combat that is by playing a lot of man, which I think teams got a lot of those looks against the Irish because they weren't really scared of what Notre Dame had out wide. And then you also had a quarterback injury very early in the year. So I want to take like the inputs of the market here. So Brian Kelly, who we consider to be a very good head coach, and Nick Saban, who we consider to be the best head coach of all time, have now both pursued this guy. Now, he wasn't Saban's first choice, obviously, but I think that does tell me something. Like, he wanted Tommy Reese to come with him to LSU, Brian Kelly did, and obviously Saban has now hired him. So he has to think highly of him. They must like what he does schematically, and, you know, we'll see. Like, does Notre Dame's offense improve with a different play caller there? How does Alabama look? I'm not going to bash the hire. I didn't necessarily love what they did at Notre Dame, but I think personnel probably had something to do with that. We've talked to different coaches who played Notre Dame this year that basically said their receivers sucked and they didn't scare us at all, and we played them in a disrespectful manner because of that.
It's Bud Elliott at Bud Elliott 3 on Twitter. I understand that he already has his own column for all the Notre Dame fans out there and the threads that continue to point his direction for all Notre Dame wide receiver analysis.
Can we talk about the spicy part of this, though?
The Brian Kelly side of this, or the Marcus Freeman side of this?
Well, I mean, Brian Kelly tried to get Reese, from our understanding, to follow him to LSU to be his offensive coordinator last year. Reese stuck around at South Bend, and then a year later, Reese is leaving Notre Dame to go join Brian Kelly's top rival in the SEC West. That's got to be awkward.
I don't think it's awkward because Alabama and Nick Saban is one of those, like, well, of course you're going to go and coach on the same staff in the same position that has launched Lane Kiffin into a head coaching position, that has launched Steve Sarkisian into a head coaching position. Like, there is a Tommy Reese career aspect of this that's like, I go there and I'm successful, then there are going to be head coaching opportunities for me. And if that's something that he wants to do, then this is a great, honestly, it's a better spot for him to be able to take that next step than it would be to try to hang around in his current post at Notre Dame.
There's no reason why you would stay at Notre Dame as opposed to going to Alabama. Like, the personnel quality is just better. And the track record of guys moving up, like, even Bill O'Brien moved up. He's the OC of the Patriots now. That's a better job than being OC at Alabama. So you take it, you get a big job off it, especially on the offensive side. On the defensive side, those guys haven't really all worked out. But, I mean, Loxley went to Maryland. Kiffin went to Ole Miss. I mean, like, the guys who have been OCs for Nick, I think they probably improve their understanding of defense as well, because Nick's such a defensive genius, and I think it probably helps them become better head coaches because of it. So this is Reese's ticket to getting a head coaching job.
Ty Simpson, starting quarterback, probably. If we're to try to sort of read the room, consider who the OC is and consider what we've got there with Simpson and Milrow kind of as the two that are running for first team snaps here in spring ball.
I don't know. I think Tommy's going to be looking for somebody who can throw the ball further than 10 yards down the field. That's for sure.
I will say, I don't think it'll be Sam Hartman, who posted a workout video with Notre Dame's logo on it. So for all the thought of, like, can Hartman follow Tommy Reese to Alabama? I don't think that's going to happen. I know the chat hasn't even suggested it. It was just my initial thought. I know Danny Cannell.
Yeah, Danny texted it. He was like, can Hartman go too?
Yeah.
Which I think actually you could technically, if the first transfer used was a non-grad transfer, then you still have the grad transfer in the chamber, right?
I mean, I don't even know if he's enrolled, right? I mean, if he's just floating out there, not enrolled somewhere, he could go and enroll somewhere else, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if he has not enrolled in school and if he has not played a snap, then I think a lot of these transfer hurdles, you know, we can just slide out one for another and still get your one-time transfer waiver taken care of. But yeah, Hartman's going to stay at Notre Dame. I mean, it's a very different, like, okay, you're at Wake Forest, right? You're going to go to Notre Dame. In terms of just overall, like, campus, university, like, I mean, sure, we're going from Baptist to Catholic, but we're still going to, you know, the still smaller private school kind of approach. It's a good fit for him, right?
I think so. Yeah. Also, like on Reese, in his mind, he always has to be the guy that lost out to Freeman for the head coaching gig. Now, I think Freeman was much more proven than he was as a coordinator. So Notre Dame made the right choice if the choice was to pick between those two. And I don't necessarily think it was much of a choice, but it still has to be weird, like work with the guy who got the promotion over you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I actually think this can be a positive for the Irish as well.
Okay, so let's go there. And by the way, apparently Hartman is enrolled, you know, in a grad program right now. So that's that. All right, who's going to be the offensive coordinator for Sam Hartman? Where does Notre Dame go for its OC opening?
I don't know.
Weiss Jr.
The prodigal son returns.
I'm just saying. He's a pretty, like, the testing the marketplace, you know, talk about, like, whatever the market says. I would say that Charlie Weiss Jr. has if it's green or red, I would say his little, like, ticket is green. He is considered a coach that is rising in the industry. He's had success. I mean, he's there with Lane Kiffin, so it's not like he is, you know, totally running his own show without a lot of influence from the head coach, but he grew up around the program. If I don't know how Notre Dame fans would feel about it, but he definitely came to mind for me.
According to the chat, the names right now are Andy Ludwig and Joe Moorhead.
Both would be good hires. And if it's Joe Moorhead, goodness gracious, if Joe Moorhead, Sean Lewis, and Candle all step down from sitting head coaching jobs to go take Power Five offensive coordinator jobs, that is going to be a kind of a sad offseason for the Mac.
I talked about it. The salaries that are offered now, it's hard to get hired as a head coach from a Mac school to a Power Five school because it's hard to justify taking a guy from 700 grand, if even that, and then giving him 8 million.
All right, you want to get spicy here?
Yeah.
If Marcus Freeman lands Andy Ludwig or Joe Moorhead, are we going to have to do a show where we say that Freeman out-hired Nick Saban, even though Saban took Freeman's OC?
I would think I would rather have Ludwig or Moorhead, yes.
I kind of it's at least on par and track record. Mm-hmm. I think their track record is better than what Tommy Reese
longer
has.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, if you go work in Tuscaloosa, it's very well reported at this point that you have to like use Nick's terminology and run, you know, the Alabama offense, which can have a lot of elements of what you want to run, but it's going to be like, hey, we run mainly this stuff. You could run your flavor of this stuff. The terminology is going to remain the same, which is something Saban actually did that was smart for a while because he had so much coaching turnover. He didn't want kids have to learn new terminology three times in their four-year career. But I wonder if you have more freedom to run what you want to run under Freeman.
I would assume
you are
so.
Going to have, I don't know what Marcus Freeman's individual approach is to the offensive side of the ball, but you've got more, I'm just going to recklessly speculate that you've got more freedom to do things your way under 130, 129 FBS head coaches than you do when you're stepping into Nick Saban's Alabama coaching staff meeting room. It's a lot of yes, sir. And I'm on it. That kind of stuff. That's what I expect. So Joe Moorhead or Andy Ludwig. Andy Ludwig would be a bad loss for Utah and a great hire for Notre Dame. Any other names out there that stand out?
It's the typical message board stuff bringing up Joe Brady, but Joe Brady's not coming back to college. He's just not.
Does he want to recruit?
No.
Right.
The man probably could have had any college head coaching job he wanted after what he did at LSU. And he just, no, I'm going to the NFL later, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that an important part of this hire will be quickly establishing the relationship with CJ Carr, Lloyd Carr's grandson, who is committed to Notre Dame. He's a top five quarterback for us right now in our rankings at 24/7 Sports. Like, I think he's a good player. Again, early rankings are like they're very volatile, you know, but we feel good about him as a player. So that is an important thing because the Irish obviously did not hang on to their chances for Dante Moore this cycle.
And don't we give Freeman some credit for that recruiting win? I mean, I'm just going off of a lot. I'm going off a lot of CJ Carr shared photos of him and Freeman. Right? It seems like Freeman spent a lot of time locking it down. The grandson of one of the most successful Michigan head coaches in program history.
I mean, name me a successful program at the nationally elite level where the head coach is not the best recruiter on the team, or damn near it. Kirby's a hell of a recruiter. Nick is still a hell of a recruiter. I think Ryan Day is actually a pretty damn good recruiter. Harbaugh is kind of such an interesting dude. Mm-hmm.
And we've also discussed at length that Michigan is at the top of the sport on the field. Michigan is not at the top of the sport in the recruiting rankings.
I think Harbaugh is kind of like PJ Fleck, and either you vibe with him or you very much don't. And if you do vibe with him, he's a very good recruiter.
Mm. If you like what he's putting down. All right, I mentioned Jason Candle, the head coach at Toledo, was on the list of candidates to be interviewed by Mario Cristobal for the offensive coordinator position. Mario Cristobal now has an offensive coordinator and a defensive coordinator opening. What do we got our eyes on as Mario looks to try to build his staff out ahead of, I'll say it again, an extremely, extremely important 2023 season for the trajectory of that program? Because after going 5-7 in year one, there needs to be noticeable improvement for you to be able to go back to the recruiting trail and go lock down another top 10 staff class.
Whew. Tom, you got any ideas on this one? Because defensively, I kind of have a hunch, but
I don't have any idea who's going to be the offensive coordinator. I don't know how, we've talked about this, so I don't know how attractive the job is. I don't know who wants to be the offensive coordinator for Mario Cristobal based on the track record of offensive coordinators for Mario Cristobal. And also just the bigger picture, no matter who it is, I understand that Miami had a rough season in the first year going 5-7. But losing both your coordinators after 1 year is very seldom a good thing, whether you're pushing them out or they're choosing to leave on their own. There's really no way to spin it as this is fine. This is great. Everything's going to be wonderful. I don't think it's a good sign. It doesn't mean they can't overcome it. It doesn't mean that Miami can't win under Mario Cristobal or won't win under Mario Cristobal. It's just, if I'm a Miami fan right now, I'm a little worried.
So offensively, you're stepping into a situation where I think the offensive line will be better. So Zion Nelson, because he got hurt early in the year, really didn't play for them. So he decided to come back and not do the NFL draft thing. Van Dyke got hurt. He should be back healthy. They feel good enough about him that they did not pursue a starter through the transfer portal. Receiver-wise, I am still very skeptical of Miami's receivers. Colby Young came on a little bit towards the end of the season. Restrepo was hurt for long stretches last year, and the offense really kind of cratered when he was out. Running backs, I think, are fine. They may not have like a huge difference maker, but I think they're largely okay there. You take the job, I think you're going to be able to show a lot of improvement over the numbers they put up last year. So from that standpoint, your stock will rise. From the other standpoint, which is how much is Mario Cristobal going to put his thumb on this offense, I think that is ever present in your mind if you're considering this job. So I don't know who they're going to hire. Like, Jason Candle's been out there, you know, reported for as one of their top targets. I heard the Doug Nussmeier stuff. That's extremely interesting to me because I think Gary Nussmeier, I have a hunch he might be the best quarterback in LSU's quarterback room right now. So if you get him, could you also get Garrett to play for his dad? I don't know, potentially. Defensively, I wouldn't put a lot of money on this, but if I had to bet, I would guess Charlie Strong, who's already on the staff, is pretty tight with Mario, has been a DC before. That's my hunch.
The Brad in the chat asks, isn't the dig on Candle that he's not the best X's and O's coach? I generally think that Toledo's offenses have been pretty good. The dig on Candle is that he can't cover a spread as a favorite.
And their game
extremely gambling. Yeah, it's like an extremely gambling centric angle. Yeah. Like, if I'm a fan of a team, I am not frustrated by the hire of Jason Candle as an offensive coordinator, but understand that to my knowledge, most of that smoke is from gamblers who are just so frustrated at this Toledo team that because of game management and other issues seems to be underperforming its models and its projections in a very consistent manner.
They underperform their talent all the time. That team should run the MAC every year, and it doesn't.
But they did just win.
They did just win.
And that title game, boy, it was ripping fingernails off to get through it. But they found a way to get that 17-7 win against the Ohio Bobcats. Another little bit of assistant coaching carousel news. Bill O'Brien is not the only assistant coach that is going to be off to the NFL to join the New England Patriots staff, because Adrian Clem, who was previously serving as the associate head coach, run game coordinator, and offensive line coach at Oregon, will also be going back to the Pats. Obviously, he's got his own history with the Pats. Another situation where if I'm looking at the individual, I'm like, okay, yeah, it makes total sense. If I'm looking at Oregon, which already lost its offensive coordinator in Kenny Dillingham to Arizona State, listen, we gave Dan Lanning's getting all the flowers here in the offseason in terms of what he's done with some transfer portal work, with what he's done with some big-time recruiting wins, both in December and in February. So does this feel like a significant loss for the Ducks?
Yeah, to me it does. I think Adrian Clem's a really good coach. So Oregon played really good this year along the offensive line. They landed number one offensive line transfer commit, Ajani Cornelius. To me, this is a fairly – big deal, and I will be interested to see who they're able to replace him with. This is one of the tests that you can never know when you're hiring a first-time head coach. How good are they at replacing the dudes they lose? And this is only a problem generally if you hire well the first time. So, like the guys who just suck from Jump Street, they don't have this problem because you end up having to replace guys who you fire. When you lose dudes to promotions, that's one of the qualities that coaches who succeed in the long term have. And it's an unknowable. We just don't know how well they'll be able to do it. Same thing with Marcus Freeman, right? Very promising head coach, 10 years, Freeman and Lanning. How well will they replace these assistants who left for better jobs? I don't know.
What's interesting to me is Clem's leaving to be the offensive line coach in New England.
Yeah.
That's one of the positions that maybe some fans of a certain program in the Big Ten were hoping that a certain man could park his son at.
Oh, that's right.
When did we make reference to that on Thursday's show? Were we just like going in on Iowa, and then we talked about how it was just a tough, like you and Hassel, was that off air? Talking about you and Hassel going back and forth on the Iowa-Illinois back and forth, and we said, oh, Iowa's had a rough week anyway, because they already got it announced that they were not anticipating that Brian Ferentz went, that Kirk Ferentz almost spoke Harbaugh with, we're not anticipating any changes to the staff. And of course, Iowa football fans furious because what that means is that Brian Ferentz will likely be your offensive coordinator.
Oh, Brian Ferentz is going to be your offensive coordinator at Iowa next year.
I mean, how pissed are you if you're Cade McNamara and Eric Aull? Like, there's no way you decided to commit that early in the cycle to Iowa, unless they're giving him a huge bag that I don't know about.
Were they told that they were changing the offensive coordinator, or were they told that they were going to change the offense? That's what's so. I mean, I understand if you are an Iowa fan, you have absolutely no reason to give them the benefit of the doubt that they are going to change anything. You should very much take an "I will believe it when I see it" approach. But that could be what's happening. We could see Iowa, maybe not, they're not going to come out four wide every freaking play, but maybe they just kind of, add some wrinkles and stuff that they haven't been doing in the past. Maybe they modernize a little bit. We'll see. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Fans should.
You can sell to Cade McNamara. Listen, we've only been having this offense because of what we've had at quarterback. And I believe this is factual. Iowa has not had a quarterback with the raw talent or the projection or potential of Cade McNamara in quite some time. So, you can sell him like, hey, the only reason we've been doing this is because we haven't had the dude, and you're the dude. So you come here, we unlock it, it opens up. So I could understand. I would not be pissed if I was Cade McNamara. You knew what you were getting into. Even if he replaced the offensive coordinator, Kirk's still there. This is still Iowa football. There's a measure of expectation, no matter who is the offensive coordinator, in terms of the way that this team is going to handle business.
they have no leverage over him. His contract is like, you know, like a Mel Tucker or Jimbo contract, mm-hmm. right? It's just so big that there's no way you could possibly buy it out anytime. And what are they going to say? No, like we're going to make you make a change. He'll be like, cool, fire me, pay me. I'm not firing my son.
Yeah, because the hope was that Brian would get rehomed along with Bill O'Brien. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's not a firing. So you don't have any frustration at family dinner. And now you can, you know, go and make a hire that would lead to other changes. So, yeah, that news came out, I guess, as part of the signing day press conferences. We do not anticipate any changes to the staff.
Well, come reference up. To Miami.
That defense will stay so fresh. Like Ferentz plus Cristobal, they'll run about 31 plays a game. You know, just fantastic.
My world for a Brian Ferentz hired by Mario Cristobal season. Oh, I mean, who quarterback battle? Who cares? good stuff. All right, coming up on the other side, a lot of news coming out from the end of last week about Texas, Oklahoma, and the move from the Big 12 to the SEC. We thought that would be a good time to review how we got here, what's next, and what we expect it will look like when Texas and Oklahoma do jump from the Big 12 to the SEC.
Next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
The Big 12 SEC Texas Oklahoma story. It's been kind of wild, you know, 18 months, 562 days to be exact, since the Houston Chronicle first reported that Texas and Oklahoma had approached the SEC about possible membership back on July 21, 2021. Then, you know, we've gotten all the way to Friday where reports of an early entry to the leagues have stalled. Now, back in July 2021, the news was that Texas and Oklahoma were going to join in the summer of 2025, running out their existing contract with the Big 12. If we continue down this no-deal path that we seem to be on after the meetings last week, they will join in the summer of 2025. So in the last 18 months, in a sense, nothing has changed, but in reality, everything has changed. Because in September of 2021, just a few months after the announced exit, the Big 12 makes the move to bring on Cincinnati, UCF, Houston, and BYU. At the time, the language was they would be joining no later than summer 2024, which would be only about one season of awkwardness. But then in June of 22, Cincinnati, UCF, Houston, BYU announced they'll be joining July 1, 2023. Then later in June 2022, USC and UCLA announced their move to the Big Ten, which will happen in 2024. So now Texas and Oklahoma, which kickstarted this entire wave of conference realignment, are going to be the last set pieces to move. In December 22, we get news that there is, quote, gaining momentum towards a deal that could bring Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC for the 2024 season, leaving the Big 12 one year early and arriving at the same time that USC and UCLA will be making their move from the Pac-12 to the Big 10. And then here in February, we've got reports that talks are stalling. Dennis Dodd, so much good reporting out of this. CBS Sports Dennis Dodd said that an offer was made to the Big 12 recently heading into this round of meetings, but that offer was rejected. He's got a great explainer on it. And he also notes in another report that it's, quote, not dead yet, but certainly things are slowing down. Pete Thamel, he reports that early exit talks have broken down, while Ross Dellinger from Sports Illustrated quotes multiple sources, including one that says that the situation is still fluid. So as we try to unpack all of this for Texas and Oklahoma, before we get to the good stuff, like what this is going to look like, are Texas and Oklahoma well positioned, who benefits from them being stuck in the Big 12 longer, all that, what, based on y'all's read of the situation, seems to be the big hurdles preventing Texas and Oklahoma from leaving the Big 12 and joining the SEC?
I think there's only one hurdle, and I think it's pretty obvious. When Fox decided to pay the Big 12 all that money for its television rights, it wasn't so they could show Iowa State and Baylor games on Big Noon Saturday. It was so they could show Texas and Oklahoma games so they can get the ratings, so they can get the advertising revenue, which helps offset the money they have to pay the schools and gets them the money that they want. If Oklahoma and Texas go to the SEC, they lose all those games because the SEC will be exclusively broadcast on ESPN. So unless there's some kind of make weight where they can give them the money that they are going to lose for those games, there is no reason for Fox to give ESPN what it wants. These are competitors for college football. They're not going to try to make life better for the other one unless they're getting something significant in return. So it's egos. You know, the money will come from somewhere, but ego-wise, Fox will not let ESPN have its candy soon.
Right. Tom nailed it. So it's your disagreement about valuation, and like I think it was Pete Thamel who said that that Fox views Texas and Oklahoma as more than half of the value of the Big 12 contract, which if you look at recruiting rankings or if you look at like the stories people actually click on, I think Fox might be low on that. Like there's two teams in the Big 12 that click nationally, and there's, you know, 12 other teams that click regionally or locally. But then there's also the saving face and the ego thing. Like he said, like to me, that's big there too. I'm sure if you're Georgia and you had to cancel your non-conference game with Oklahoma at the direction of the SEC because they were anticipating those schools joining, you're probably kind of annoyed. If you're ESPN, you're probably very annoyed because wouldn't you want to have 9 conference games to be able to broadcast? Like that's extra revenue, extra inventory for you to sell against. But look, Fox is enforcing its rights just as much as ESPN is here. Right, like they need to get their pound of flesh for those guys leaving, and you know, if I'm them, I'm asking for quite a few rights to future games.
Yeah, there are basically like trades that have been offered. Like the deals that are potentially going on here are between ESPN and Fox, and they involve this is so much more complicated than exit fees. And just that, like the allowing them out would require a negotiation, allowing them out of the contract a year early. And that negotiation is absolutely being played by the television partners. And so they are like talking about swapping inventory to try to make the price right. And as we sit here in the wake of a blockbuster Kyrie Irving trade, I mean, it's like they keep running the trade machine and the trade is not successful. They continue to try to say, all right, so, and I do not know if this truly is it, but it's like, okay, we'll give you a week 3, this Saturday at this time slot, we'll give you this, 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 and this. And they just can't come to an agreement on it at all. I don't know that math and the dollar value of all those, of all those different time slots and what regions tend to matter more or less, but this is a fascinating look into a sport that continues to be run by television executives.
So, no, go ahead, Tom.
No, you go.
All right. Like, I think one of the things, just to try to explain to people, like how you could value it so differently, If you're Fox, the drop-off in revenue that you would have in 24 from losing those games in 24, as Fox as a company is clearly trying to step up how much it does with college football coverage. Like, they just hired Chris Felica off game day. Like, they're hiring other people. They're trying to make Joel Klatt into a really big national figure on par with like Kirk Herbstreit. So, you know, if you look at what they're doing, they're going to need that cash coming in 24. So for them, not only is it, here's how much we make off Texas, it's like, here's how much we would not make, right? And ESPN doesn't really care about that. They're like, dude, we just care about the value of the game, not the drop-off that you would have to having to, you know, do Baylor, Kansas State, which would be a stinker on Big Noon game day. In terms of ratings, it might be a great game. So ESPN doesn't care about that. Fox has to, I think, go for even more than these games are probably actually worth, because of, like, they're going to want those games and that revenue coming in now.
The only way I think that this happens at this point is either A, ESPN and Texas and Oklahoma agree to a financial sum with Fox in which they just genuinely buy themselves out of it, or B, college football playoff expansion is coming. The TV rights will be up for bid. ESPN gives Fox an extra playoff game or two. That, I think, would probably clinch them allowing Oklahoma and Texas to move for those games. Because I don't really think, like, I read Dellinger wrote, you know, you can see maybe Texas and Oklahoma schedule some road games against other Big 12 schools, which would then be broadcast on Fox. I don't really think that's going to do it. I think it's got to be, like, Fox doesn't have to do anything. You're going to have to overpay in a way to get them. And I think that would probably just be playoff games.
And again, that's like, for those of us that are just college football fans looking in on this, this is why it's awkward. And this is why there is so much momentum to just get us settled, because 2024 is when the SEC is going to be all in with ESPN. ESPN wants to be able to debut its robust SEC package with the new look SEC, including Texas and Oklahoma. The college football playoff is expanding in 2024. So right now, if we follow the contract, we are looking at a world where the 2024 season begins and USC and UCLA are in the Big Ten. And we've got a 12-team college football playoff, and Texas and Oklahoma are going to Orlando to go play UCF. Like, with this one last awkward year, the SEC, ESPN are going to try to get all the chess pieces moved before this big page-turning moment that will be the 2024 season. Fox, the Big 12, and everyone who could benefit from Texas and Oklahoma staying in the Big 12 a little longer, they're not in a hurry to go ahead and get this settled. I got a question. Do Texas and Oklahoma benefit from playing in the Big 12 longer? Competitively mostly. So financially, there are differences in the per school payouts that you get from the media rights deals. But Oklahoma and Texas, according to analysis that I trust, has already been able to use that we're headed to the SEC approach on the recruiting trail. Like, the idea that you are going to be, upping your recruiting game was one of the things a lot of people pointed to when Texas and Oklahoma made their move to the SEC, that they're going to be able to be in this, you know, big boy league. If you want to go to the NFL, you know, you got to be playing SEC football, this, that, or the other. Texas and Oklahoma just had great recruiting classes, and some of the strength of that, it has been suggested, has been that those coaches and those coaching staffs can say, hey, look, like, this is going to be an SEC program soon. We're going to be in the SEC soon. But then you don't actually have to play an SEC schedule. You get to be on the recruiting trail selling we're an SEC program, but on Saturdays, you're playing a Big 12 schedule. Financially, it's probably not the same. Competitively, I think, as with these, you know, newish tenures, Steve Sarkisian, and certainly very new for Brent Venables, they could just keep stacking wins and stacking recruiting classes. I think it might benefit them competitively to stay in the Big 12 for two more years.
What are the odds that Texas and Oklahoma are the first expanded playoff team from the Big 12?
Oh, yeah.
75%, 80%?
High.
Given the way they're recruiting, I mean, they had the third and fourth rated recruiting classes in the country. They also had the third and fourth rated recruiting classes in the new SEC. Within the Big 12, nobody competes on that level for players. Now, they do occasionally lose games. I think a lot of it is, you know, culture and coaching and whatnot. But as far as just pure projecting and the talent they're bringing in, you have to think they're going to be the overwhelming favorite to get those bids. So, and then if you're the SEC, you're like, hey, we just added the Big 12's playoff team from 2024. So like you get to kind of brag about that. Now you'd much rather have them in 24 in your league anyway, but for coaching staffs that are still trying to get their feet under them, this is maybe not the worst thing in the entire world.
That's what was ringing around in my head for sure.
I think there's a lot of validity to what you're saying. Yes.
So what is it? What the SEC league office, I think, is frustrated. I'm not reporting that, but I think that when you mentioned the getting Georgia to drop its Oklahoma game, there has been a lot of movement within the SEC office that was under the belief that this could get done in time for 2024. You know, they are holding off on announcing any kind of like scheduling models or trying to set up any kind of future schedule. Everything is waiting on the arrival of Texas and Oklahoma. What does the SEC look like with Texas and Oklahoma in the fold when they join?
Looks pretty good, Chip.
Yeah.
They still do East-West?
The model they have to go with is 3-6. If they're going to a 9-game conference slate, you just can't do it East-West. It's not going to work. That's why the Big Ten doesn't work. I think they'll go divisionless once UCLA and USC join. If you go 3-6, that's the best way to do this. I think it creates the most connectivity year to year, and you don't have people going long stretches without playing the best teams. I think the teams that really benefit from this are named Vanderbilt, Missouri, and Kentucky, and South Carolina, because those are the teams that play the weakest conference schedules. If you take out like their own team quality, they're in the East, and they really benefit on an annual basis from only playing 8 conference games. If you add an extra conference game to those teams, you're more than likely adding an extra loss to the schedule. Not a guaranteed loss, but just a fractional loss for sure, you know, on a year-to-year basis. So the bottom teams in the East are the ones that benefit the most from Texas and Oklahoma not joining right now.
Yeah, that model, by the way, is 3 annual rivals. Mm-hmm. And then to round out the 9-game conference schedule, you play 6 teams 1 year and 6 teams the next. So in a sense, you have gotten a chance to see all 15 teams in this 16-team SEC over the course of 2 years. If a player spends 4 years at a program, then he has the opportunity to play in every single stadium because you've done home and away with the rotating 6 in addition to your 3 annuals.
I don't know if anybody would ever agree to this, but if you're ESPN, you own every single SEC game already, right? Would you not just push for a 10-game conference schedule? Because odds are your non-conference games, let's be real. We talked about how Fox and ESPN are in charge of whether Texas and Oklahoma can go to the SEC quick. They'll probably have an impact on non-conference scheduling too. Like, you should schedule teams that are part of the ESPN family. Don't schedule Fox teams. And then...
Well, so there's all the SEC-ACC rivalries anyway.
That's what I'm saying. So you've got those, and you're going to see that kind of – and you're going to see G5s and FCS teams that will be coming to your school so we can broadcast it. We don't want you scheduling road games against Big 10 or Big 12 or Pac-12 teams. So do you not just push a 10-game schedule at that point if you're ESPN because you've owned all the rights to all the games anyway?
Probably should.
That's the way down the line to me.
I don't think it's that far down the line.
Ooh, okay. Like – within the 2020s?
I don't think it will. I don't know when they'll agree to it. It would be a while, but I think you start seeing that floated because that's just typically how it works. The things get mentioned and then a few years go by and it just happens.
I do want to point out the 3-6 model is not the same thing as pods. And the key difference in that in 3-6, you have 3 protected rivalries. In pods, you have 4 teams that are all playing the other 3 opponents in that pod. I don't think that's what's being proposed or is most likely because that would really mess with the rivals.
Pods,
just 3 protected rivals.
The 3-6 model is also not the same thing as the 3-6 mafia.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Shout out to Juicy J. All right. Anything? All right, so let's finish on this. When do you think Texas and Oklahoma are joining the SEC?
2025.
Yeah.
2025.
And I'll go back to my biggest thought here is that if I'm Brent Venables, I would like to have a shot win the Big 12, or even just make that college football, making the college football playoff, even as an at-large team, is easier in the Big 12 than it's going to be in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll be very interesting. And again, those all of this is coming. If you are just sort of hearing about this story now, there were meetings last week of which the reporting going in was, all right, this is going to be one of the big issues on the table. And the reporting coming out was like, well, things have stalled. Talks have broken down. A few sources are saying something could still happen, but the gaining momentum reports that we had back in December of 2022 no longer appear to be on the table. We will be back Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern time, so make sure that you subscribe and like. Turn on the notifications, smash that bell so you know when we go live, and you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!